Welcome. This is Kim Addis from Frame of Mind Coaching, and I am the host of Resilience Radio, where I interview professionals who are experts at crushing the tough stuff. Today, I am really honored to have with me as my guest, Bob Glaser. Bob, are you here?
I'm here. Good to see you, Kim.
So I've been following you for a long, long time before I finally got an actual introduction to be able to do this. So I'm actually super excited because I'm a big fan of yours.
Well, thank you. And I'm excited to be here. I know it's taken a little while.
So please share with everybody what you do and, you know, how you do it and who you do it for.
Yeah, thanks. Actually, I was going to say what we do and how we do it are, I always talk about both of those. So I founded a company called Acceleration Partners, and we are a performance marketing agency. We help large brands run what's called affiliate programs, which is basically getting people to work for you on a partnership basis and paying for outcomes. And we do that globally and work with some great companies. And I think we've really developed into a leader in the space. But equally as important to us is how we do that and how we built the company. And we've tried to blow up a lot of the traditional work-life paradigm norms, which is actually a part of our vision, and build a company that's very different and outperforms, but at the same time has employees who are doing really well outside of work and healthy and a culture that people really want to join.
Okay, so step back. I want to hear about the culture, but before we hear about the culture, give me an example of a company who would hire your services and the kind of partnerships you would help them build.
Sure. Yeah, everyone always asks for an example. It's a lot easier. So we would help a company like Target. So they Target has thousands of partners or affiliate partners who could range from a deal site to a product comparison site to a mom blogger who write and they publish. People these days, I think there's people who sell things online and then people who control the content. This is basically the mechanism for them to partner. And they might write about this amazing stroller. They might link to it on Target. And if the person goes from their blog, buys it from Target, all of that is tracked. And they would only be compensated after the purchase. So the retailers really love this because they're paying for outcomes. And it also gives publishers a way to partner with some great brands. And again, everyone does well together.
And do you facilitate that partnership? Do you put it in place? Like, what's your role exactly?
Yeah, we recruit and manage the partners. So if you can think of some of these programs at scale, they might have 10,000 partners. And obviously, they have varying degrees of size and activity, but there's a lot of work to recruit them, manage them, get them the materials they need. They might say, hey, I really want to run a campaign on X. Can you get me the creative about that? So as these programs get big, it is sort of a large organism that needs to be maintained.
So there are all kinds of bits and pieces that you are managing.
Correct. And we work with some different technologies and partner with them to run those programs and scale them up.
So let me ask you a question. A lot of our listeners aren't Target, but they are highly driven entrepreneurs who are running sizable companies, right? Anywhere from $5 million in revenues up to $150, $200 million in revenue. Again, not quite Target.
Yeah.
What would you recommend for those people who are interested in the idea of partnerships but have no idea where to start? It sounds like you work with a really larger sized firms. Like, what should they do if they're interested in this kind of model where it's performance-based partnership?
Yeah, well, they could download the first chapter of my book for free, and that would actually help lay out the landscape. We have a lot of content on our website at acceleration partners.com, free content, how to get started, 101. We do work with a lot of companies that are in that revenue range and that are growing quickly, but really it's shifting. Most of them will want to do it. The question is, they're going to dedicate the time and the resources, because in theory, they'd say, if I can only pay for outcomes, I'd love to do that. How do I go get 1,000 people who are working for me, you know, on a commission only basis? So there's some content up there that I think would be helpful. The book might be helpful just to get a lay of the land and understand the types of partnerships that may be available to them.
So as you know, I run a coaching company and I coach the highly driven population, people like you and people who belong to organizations like tech, EO, YPO, et cetera, those kinds of people.
Yeah.
And the way that we generate business is really through three ways so far. One is through a lot of referrals. The second way is through speaking engagements. And the third is through podcasts. Like those are our primary lead generation mechanisms. And I found for myself is that I go and I speak and I bring home a lot of leads and it's very effective, but it's really time consuming on my part. So I've been thinking about building partnerships as well. In other words, building partnerships with existing speakers who don't have any coaching entity at all and who would benefit from, you know, lead generation. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I mean, so we always say, if you help me define the outcome you're looking, then we can create the technical infrastructure and the way to compensate that. So if you said, look, I know that for everyone who fills out my inquiry form on a website and says that they have a business of X million revenue or more in these criteria, that that is worth $100 to me, you know, then you're able to set that up and actually create a mechanism so that people can do that. And that's where the scale comes in, because you could say to 100 people, hey, we've got this all set up. If you drive these types of leads, you can sign up and join, get an account, and please do that. I'll give you an example in the reverse. I think most of the smart podcasts that I know, you know, they tend to, when they have an author on, they have a book, they just join Amazon's affiliate program and link to the book, right? They're not going to make millions of dollars. But that's right. These are just the small examples of where I don't think people really realize that, again, the internet is broken down between people that are great marketers and people that deliver something. And this is giving them a way to a partner in an ecosystem.
And would you recommend that someone start small and partner with, let's say, five people and then grow over time, kind of ironing out the bumps and the, you know, some of the things that might come up early on? Or do you recommend that they just like go for it?
I believe you should get it right. So here's an example. Let's say you do this with five people and you realize that actually this is so much better than anything else you're doing, and you would actually pay $250 a lead. Well, it'd be better to have known that, and then, because maybe you wouldn't have gotten the attention of some other people at $150 a lead, but you might have at $250 a lead. So we always tell people, yeah, figure out the economics, get the kinks out, figure out which types of partners do better, and then go replicate that. It's we equate it to like customer personas, but it's partner personas. Who are the types of partners that are the best? Then when you figure out which ones work, you know, double down on that.
Okay. And let me ask you one more related question. Is sure. It a good idea to pay for the lead or the closed sale?
It depends, right? A lot of businesses can't pay for the closed sale because it happens offline and they can't get the tracking to work. So if you're paying for the lead, you have to monitor lead quality carefully, usually by partner. And you have to kind of go back and say, am I getting these? So some businesses just can't, like if you're a bank and there's a discussion, they can't pay for the lead. But what you need to do is you need to back out all the leads into close. So I would actually determine what a close is worth to you. And then I would do the math to say, well, it should be an average of 10 leads to a close. And then I'd break down the value of a close into the lead. And then I would watch that to make sure that it's performing. This is exactly why this is not a set it and forget it channel. And when you're asking what we do, like these are the types of ongoing discussions with hundreds or thousands of partners at a time.
So I want to just say before we continue, and I'm putting it out there on my podcast, that I am actually actively looking for speakers who are interested in a partnership. So there you go. It's on the podcast. You made it happen. Thank you. Let's go into the culture of your organization. I'm really interested in hearing about that. You said you do it differently. Tell me about that.
Yeah, if something didn't make sense, we've tried to really do that differently. We've set really clear core values, which you know are just three: own it, embrace relationships, and excel and improve. And we have we hire based on those. Everything that is rewarded from a behavior standpoint and check-in is based on those. Promotions are based on those. Our end of year awards are based on that. When we make a decision to move on, it's based on that. And we do really long-term planning. You know, we created Cam Harrell 3-year Vivid Vision, fully open book, and let people work remotely and from home. We just really defined, I think, both the outcomes and the behaviors that we're looking for, and then have given people the flexibility to achieve those in the way that works for them. And another thing that we've really focused on is capacity building in people. And as we grow 30 or 40% a year, you know, most talent can't keep up with that. People have to get better just to stay on the on-demand curve. And we found this real win-win is working with employees, finding out what they like to do outside of work, their goals, you know, pushing them to achieve outside of work, and working on training holistically that just makes them better at what they do. And we get better people performing in work. And I think people get better husbands, moms, spouses outside of work. And that's been a real win-win for us.
So are you saying that if people are happy outside of work, they perform better inside of work? I agree with that, if that's what you're saying.
It's beyond that. I think it's happiness, but I actually think it's if they are performing and achieving and growing. Uh-huh. Because in a growth company, I've been told by a lot of coaches and mentors over the year, every time your company doubles, you will break half your processes and half your people. And we don't want to break half our people. So the goal was how can we actually grow our people to meet our needs? And, you know, we've even focused on, you know, what are your personal and life goals and how can we help you meet them as an organization? One of the things that we have going on this year is about half the company publicly posted their goals in a Slack channel to each other. And we have people that are running marathons and triathlons and signing up to do things they haven't done before and getting out of their comfort zone in their personal lives. And that really has translated into their professional growth.
So when you say build capacity,
yes,
what you're saying is build the person. Like let's just define capacity. Are you talking about work related capacity? Are you talking about increase their productivity, increase their output, efficiency? What do you mean by capacity?
Yeah, I break capacity, and this is the topic of my next book, into four buckets, which is spiritual, intellectual, physical, and emotional. I think actually focusing on just making them more productive at work is a linear way to look at it versus I always say, look, someone who is stressed out at home doesn't walk into work and is mentally clear and is prioritized. Someone who has, you know, problems prioritizing at home doesn't prioritize at work. So there are certain life and capacity skills where I think you improve the ability of the person to process more information, take on more, cope with more, be more physically well, and be able to achieve more. It's not about working harder. We're really trying to focus on getting better outcomes. And so a lot of our leadership training is really focused on, I think, that intersection between professional and personal development. Just, you know, hitting the whip at someone says, like, be more productive. That doesn't work. But, you know, as an example, we have someone we have people training for some events who've never done it before. I've seen as their physical stamina and health has improved, they are performing better at work.
Mm-hmm. So when you say leadership training, do you put them in a room and provide training? Do you hire them a sports coach who will help them, do the triathlon? Like, what does that look like? What does leadership training look like?
All of the above. So we have internal leadership training that's very focused on a lot of it on sort of inner core and even personal journey. We actually did something at the end of the year last year where we granted a bunch of wishes and goals. So we actually hired a coach for a lot of people that wanted to do those events and has been working with all of them. And then we have video content, we have book clubs, we have all kinds of stuff that we have built up where it is not just about function. It's not just about training on what it is that we do in affiliate marketing. Mm-hmm. It is on, again, training on how do you relate with people? How do you communicate with people? These are all things that improve all aspects.
So one of the things that I've been studying really for most of my life is leadership. And I've really discovered something very interesting lately is that, the United States spends billions and billions and billions of dollars on training soft skills, and they aren't getting the results that they want. And so I've been looking at this, and it's very interesting what you're telling me because it provides a very powerful backdrop. And what we see is that we're putting money into this system of training, and training isn't working. And so, of course, I have a very biased perspective, is that typically when we train for skills, but it's not always a skills issue. A lot of times there are other issues at play, and I like to look at, you know, how a person thinks about everything, how a person thinks about their health, their family, their productivity, their capacity, how they think about their worthiness, all of it, right? And so my approach is to say, hey, instead of focusing on just the doing, let's back up, let's provide coaching to the whole entire person and really look at what they believe to be true, their perspectives, their values. Let's look at their whole being. And it sounds like you're very much aligned with that.
Yeah. And, you know, I sort of fell into this. I mean, it started with me realizing that I was increasing my own capacity. And I want to be clear, it's sort of an individual's ability or power to do something or experience or understand. It is not about like just getting more throughput. I mean, when I talked about emotional capacity before, you know, people who have very low emotional capacity hit any bumps and collapse, right? Well, someone else just goes over the speed bump. So they're exerting the same amount of energy, but one person, you know, can't get 10 feet and the other can get 100 feet. And so I think this is the win-win that a lot of companies can really dig into. If you're just trying to extract more gain out of someone, you know, in relation to a skill or something that does their job, that's very surface level. And again, if that person is sleeping 4 hours a night, if they have a ton of stress, if they have problems with money, I mean, none of that stuff is going to matter,
right?
Probably.
Absolutely.
That you're working on. Look, we can train people to be great affiliate managers, but when you have a company growing 30 or 40% a year, people, and I have a graph on this called the capacity building sort of paradigm, people have to get 30 or 40% better a year actually to stay up with their job. Right. And that's a really hard thing to do, and why so many people don't make it. We tried to flip it and we were like, look, we want to hire these great people and teach them to grow and come along for the journey.
So what do you do when someone isn't keeping up? Do you let them go? Do you move them along? What do you do?
So there's another example where we decided to break a paradigm. As we started to have that problem, and you will, we started running into a lot of, you know, 2 week notice, and I sat back and I was like, this 2 weeks notice thing is just a relic from a different era. We really need to change this, have open on conversations and make it okay for people to leave. And so we started this program we called Mindful Transition. It took 2 or 3 years to get going, but we have a totally open system. Both if you come to us and say, look, this isn't working, I think I want to do something else, or I have a problem, or we say this isn't working, and we will help someone find another job, we'll figure out the right solution for them where it's here or elsewhere, but don't look at people leaving as this negative. And we haven't, other than a fiduciary issue that we had 7 years ago, we have not fired anyone in the last 7 years.
So I do a lot of work with these entrepreneurs that I mentioned before, and you know, I teach them how to coach. I teach them fundamental coaching skills. And one of the issues that always comes up is, well, what happens when they're not performing, or what happens, let's say, if they have a problem at home and they're not focused at work, now we have a conflict of interest. And one of the things I say is, no, you never have a conflict of interest, because if you're 100% behind the well-being, success, and you know, absolute thriving of your person, you never have a conflict, because when you get behind that, they can be successful here in your company or somewhere else. Right. And so that idea of mindful transition is completely aligned with that issue, so that there's no conflict. You're 100% the people who are in your company and beyond. Right. Even after.
Yeah. And Ayn Rand wrote one of her books, There Are No Contradictions. You just need to check your premises.
Right.
And I always like that. Yeah. We're writing a book on this because a lot of companies have asked us how we've done it. And we actually want to train our employees on it, saying, look, because we use it as a recruiting thing. We talk about what it looks like to leave Acceleration Partners before you come here, because we think it sort of de-risks. You say, look, if this isn't the right fit, it's not going to be a disaster in your career. But I've been talking to some organizational psychologists, because I've been trying to get some academic data to support what we have seen. And there's not a lot. I think it's a cognitive dissonance, but you have this issue with managers who can't reconcile the fact that they like this person, but they're just not doing the job or can't do it and maybe don't want to do it. And when that happens and when they have to, you know, make a decision that's uncomfortable for them or have that discussion, the way they do it is they make the person out to be just bad overall and they start distancing themselves from them.
Yes.
Rather than doing what you said, which is, look, I'm going to hold in my mind two ideas, which is one, that Kim is an amazing person and is awesome, but Kim is just not doing this job very well. And I'm going to sit down and say, Kim, like, we're very performance oriented. We're in performance marketing. All the stuff that we do, you still can't escape your metrics, your goals. They're all public, right? So people know when they're not hitting it. I say, Kim, look, it's been 4 quarters. This just isn't working. Let's talk about it. Maybe you need a different job at the company, or maybe say, look, I don't want you to not be successful. And I learned a lot of this from Patty McCord. I'd rather help you find you a job elsewhere, treat you respectfully as a person, but also not excuse the fact that you're not hitting your goals here. And it's hard because even though we espouse this and we have this program, you really have to train managers on this because they don't like to be left. Or when that person says that they're leaving, they get all, you know, or they want to, they're leaving because they're moving to Montana because their husband wants to live on a ranch. And then they get all pissy about that. And it's right. Like, look, it's not about you. It's about them. You should be able to be happy with them. So we have to do a lot of training on that, really, with our managers, to say, if you are surprised by your employees, you know, if they come to you and give you 2 weeks notice, which you really haven't had in a few years, you know, that is a failure on your part. You have failed to have open discussions, make yourself accessible, acknowledge red flags. It never should have gotten that to that point.
Right. It's very interesting because you're really helping your managers see their roles very differently. And I would even go so far as to say that you're creating a coaching culture within your organization.
Yeah. I mean, our aligned to our core value of an excel and improve, everyone is always giving and asking for feedback. And
so you have a lot of employees though to manage.
We do, but we focus on management and leadership, and you know that rolls down throughout the organization.
So you're about to grow further. You're thinking of building, or you're in the process of building, a business in Asia Pacific. What does that come with? What kind of challenges are you facing?
Lots of challenges. We're building a global organization. We're really building the first one in our industry. And we run into all these natural, you know, tensions between function and area and division and region. And we've talked about this pretty openly. We said, look, these are actually natural organizational tensions as you get bigger. And let's discuss them. Let's figure it out. And let's solve it in the best interest of the organization. And when we recently did an offsite, And our coaches asked me to really kind of put out a dictum for the team over the few days. I said, look, my goal is that we figure out how to grow an organization that has zero politics. We're going to have these things, but I want to develop a culture where everyone makes a decision that's in the best interest of the team. We discuss the issues, we solve them. You know, we don't have a company where people do things for the wrong reasons or for power or for maximization. We're trying to offer a global product to our clients, and we're going to need to be a seamless global organization. So that is certainly a challenge for our team. It's something that some of us have done before and we haven't, but we're trying to approach it with the same way, which is, yeah, when we have a problem, let's discuss it. Let's throw it on the table and let's figure out a solution. We're already seeing some of our tried and true processes that we run here, our software that we run in the US needs to be tweaked for our branches overseas.
And how do you account for actual cultural differences, language differences, upbringing differences? How do you account for that? And how do you really expose people to the idea of no politics?
You have to model it. Mm-hmm. I think, what someone once said to me, you know, they joked that their parenting mantra was do as I say, not as I do. You know, it just doesn't work in leadership. I think
it doesn't work in parenting.
People follow what you do. So I think, you know, we need our leaders at the highest thing to model that and say, look, we're running into this issue here. Let's discuss it. What has been really cool to me, though, is that we decided we were not going to alter our core values in any way or regionalize them. And so we're hiring these people that look and sound very different, but really have the same fundamental values. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the starting point. And then we're making very clear that we should have a best way of doing things or a local best ways, but we're looking for those regions to tell us what is different, what is the adaptation. The analogy we've used a lot recently, which I think has been helpful to our team, is that we need to run on a single software. The software is the best practice. It helps people not make mistakes, but that anyone should raise their hand at any time and saying, this software is not working here for this reason. And like, we need to upgrade the code and move to the next version.
Right.
And so that has come into play a lot with the regions where they say, look, you know, we have certain things that get copied on managers, and when they get translated, everyone was getting 10 times the emails. They said, that doesn't work here. We said, great, let's consciously upgrade the software. Thanks for the mm-hmm. feedback. Mm-hmm. So part of being excellent is that you say we have a standard, but we are actually willing for that standard to be challenged all day and every day. But we make a decision jointly to move that forward. You don't get to, you know, pick and choose and freewheel, because the standard exists so that people get a repeatably excellent experience with your company.
How do you select for those core values, especially if they're coming from other countries? What's the mechanism you use for screening?
We have an interview process that people have said that is more thought out and rigid than most $100 million revenue companies they've seen. So there are a bank of questions that are tied to each core value. Mm-hmm. And you know, we talk about coaching. So work with a coach years ago, and we're like, oh, we have, look at this. So good. We have the core values. And he said to us, well, how do you know what a good answer is? Mm-hmm. And we said, well, that's a good question. He said, here's what we did. We wrote down all the questions, and then we said, this is a 10 answer. This is what a 1 answer sounds like. So that is what we have. In each round, we focus on the person and then the role. So there will be a variety of questions or examples of behavior based off those core values. And then there will actually be all laid out for the interviewer what they should be looking for or what a 1 or a 10 sounds like. And then all of those profiles from each interview are integrated, and we come to the table at the end, always in a committee and always with someone who's disinterested in that interview and comes sort of to represent the company. Mm-hmm. and can say, like, look, I know you really want to hire and need someone in that position, but I'm looking at the data, I'm looking at the things here. I think we have a big red flag in right. race relationships.
Okay, so as we're rounding the corner of this interview, you do have a coach on the line. Is there a question you have for this particular coach?
What's the most, you know, I live in the world of all the people you talked about, EO, YPO, otherwise.
Yeah.
What's the most repeatable mistake that you see people making? Either
That's
personally
a great question.
Or, either personally or professionally.
I see the mistake of frustration and kind of a misguided way of handling it. So they're very, very frustrated, and sometimes they lash out, they lose their temper, they yell, scream, blame, point fingers. So that's yeah. one way. Another way is to completely shut down and withdraw and pull away and not express it at all. Another way is to say, okay, move over. If it's going to be done right, I have to do it myself, and not developing the team. I would say that's the thing that I see most often is handling stress or frustration in ways that aren't necessarily serving them individually or the company. And I see that over and over and over again. You know, when we look at this type of client in particular, we notice that they have this really great work ethic, they put in their long hours, but what happens is there's a sacrifice that they make in order to become successful. And we've categorized those sacrifices into 4 buckets, as you will, right? So the first one is what we call isolation. So it's like, hey, nobody cares as much as I do. It's my company. I'm the one who's ultimately responsible. I can't share the burden. And, you know, that feeling right there. So they're in it on their own by themselves. The second one that we see all the time is the sacrifice of strained relationships. So they're working their butts off And what happens is they're not spending a whole lot of time at home with the people they love. And those people don't understand, like, why, you know, you say it's for me, but here I am, I'm in your corner and you're not really even paying any attention to me. So there's a friction that takes place on a personal level, and that's not uncommon. The third one is what we call chronic dissatisfaction. What is that? Is that these are high achievers. They've done pretty well in their lives. But and let's say they've reached, you know, a level of achievement, they wonder in the back of their heads why they're only here and why they're not at a much, much higher level. Like, what's wrong with me? Why is this taking so long? Why is this so slow? Why do I have all these problems? You know, the guy next to me isn't having these problems. He can do it. Why can't I? And so there's this constant feeling of I'm not there yet. And you could put 100 entrepreneurs in the room and they might say I'm really far away or I'm close, but they'll never say I'm there, ever. And the last one is what I call slippage. And this is a big sacrifice that a lot of entrepreneurs make. And it's that they let very important things fall through the cracks. Perhaps it's their health, their nutrition. They, you know, work long, long hours and they fail to have a good time. They fail to take time off. They fail to take vacations, spend time with family, etc. So they don't sleep very well. Maybe they drink a lot, whatever. They let the very important things slip through the cracks. And when you ask them, hey, does any of this resonate for you? They all say, yes, that's me. All of it. Yeah. All of it, right? And so what we notice is that what drives this is the way they think, their belief systems. And that's the work that we do. But that's the chronic thing that we see over and over and over and over again with all entrepreneurs. Hope that answered your question.
Those are all familiar. And, you know, to the first point that you said, the book that we're reading now as a team, we actually bought everyone, all our high-level leaders, Kindles, and we made sort of this reading club, and not optional, even though people are excited about it, but the book Extreme Ownership. And if you haven't read that or people haven't read that, it just, you start with everything, every frustration or whatever, saying, well, here's what I did wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, this person just doesn't understand me, whatever. I must not have communicated well. And it just changes the whole conversation. And they say up and down. So the subordinate person, I must not have made it clear to my boss what I'm doing if he's frustrated at me or whatever. And it is really a great way to think of things and take a step back and say, all right, what could I have done better? And even if I know that person did whatever, I'm actually going to flip it and say that was a failure of my own.
Yeah. And in our language, in the frame of my coaching language, that is, you are responsible for every single thing that you encounter, everything you see, smell, hear, taste, and touch. So the question becomes is not only what did I do, but what did I think? What do I believe to be true that's causing me to experience this friction or conflict or lack of results? So what am I thinking? And that's really where we take things. And the philosophy is that first we think, then we behave. First we think, then we act. So a lot of times we focus on looking at how someone behaves, and I always want to back it up and look at how someone thinks. But Bob, I mean, I love everything that you've shared with me. I think that you are a leader in your industry, but in beyond. And so I'm so, so thrilled. I want to ask you to repeat, how do people find you?
Sure. A couple ways you can find, you can go to my personal site, which connects to everything that I do, which is robertglaser.com. You can look up Acceleration Partners if you don't want to spell it, and you'll find it. And then Friday, if you want to get the weekly note that I sent out to my team and about 40,000 leaders across the world now, you go to FridayFWD.com or just do a quick search for Friday Forward.
Awesome. Thank you for spending your time with us. Thank you for sharing your insights and even personally for giving me some things to think about partnership. So thank you.
Thanks, Kim.